Welcome back to the Physio Foundations podcast, where we talk about the knowledge and skills that provide the foundation of expert clinical practice. So today, I'm talking to Luke Davies. So Luke is a musculoskeletal physiotherapist, an educator and researcher in the School of Primary and Allied Healthcare here at Monash University. And Luke's research has focused on telehealth in physiotherapy clinical practice and education. And so Luke completed these postgraduate Doctor of Physiotherapy course at Macquarie University in Australia, and a PhD at the University of Melbourne, where he was looking into improving physio patient care with telehealth. And that's what led to this, the idea for this conversation and episode today. I'd like to know more about telehealth and particularly how we can use it in physio education and our particularly our students and grads, what emerging areas exist in telehealth. So I'm going to ask Luke all of that and more. And I think it's a good thing to do to start at the beginning and ask him some questions like, what is telehealth and how can we use it in our practice? So let's do that. Luke Davies, welcome to Physio Foundations.
Thank you, Luke. Thanks for having me. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, thanks a lot for coming on, making the time. I know you're busy and it's really good to have you and you sort of explore this topic. So tell us a bit about your background and interests, where you trained as a physio and, what brought you up to this point?
So my background is probably somewhat varied. It's always been in allied health, but at the very beginnings, I started as a sports and remedial massage therapist, then went on to do my undergraduate in health science, which majored in sport and exercise science. Then on to my Master's of Clinical Exercise Rehab, and then my Doctor of Physio at Macquarie. So that's where I got my training in physiotherapy. And then, as you mentioned earlier, I came down to Melbourne and completed my PhD at the University of Melbourne, which was quite exciting. And I suppose that's a snapshot of my journey up until this point.
Quite interesting that you started off in remedial massage and now you developed a special interest area and PhD in research in telehealth, which involves, I'll ask you in a minute, what is telehealth? But obviously it involves doing treatments and interventions remotely through Zoom or through teleconference or telephone. So they're quite opposite ends of the spectrum, the hands-on and the hands-off, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They're complete polar opposites. I do thoroughly enjoy the manual side of things and the hands-on therapy. But I think that when you have a long career, you need to look at longevity. And telehealth is a great way to be able to still practice clinically, particularly if you're finding that the hands and the joints are, getting a little bit dusty as you get older and a bit long in the tooth. So I think having both of those options, it's quite a nice blend.
Mm. So what is telehealth?
Well, in short, telehealth is the delivery of healthcare services using remote technologies. So there's three main ways that telehealth may be used in clinical practice. There's synchronous telehealth, and this refers to a real-time consultation between a patient and their health professional. And this is often done by video conferencing or telephone. There's also asynchronous telehealth. This is often where information may be collected at one site by one health professional, and then it's transferred to another. So if you have a think about a patient going for imaging, that's a good example. Their imaging is taken at one location by one professional. It's either stored in cloud-based software or secure servers at that location, and then it's sent on to the other health professional for interpretation of those results. There's also remote patient monitoring as well. And as the name suggests, you can monitor a patient outside of traditional care settings using digital medical devices, such as weight scales, blood pressure monitors, pulse oximeters, sure, and blood glucose monitors and all of those sorts of things.
Mm. So what type of people, patients, can telehealth be especially useful for?
It's a really interesting question, and we're in the process at the moment of doing a scoping review to find out exactly what populations do receive care from physio. And it's preliminary results. The populations that are able to access or use telehealth are very much your musculoskeletal, your neurological, cardiorespiratory, pediatrics, oncology, and also geriatrics. So all of those populations access some form of telehealth delivered physiotherapy.
Mm. And the first thing that springs to mind for me is people in rural and remote areas with a lot of travel time to visit a specialist or visit somebody at all. So what sort of role does telehealth have? And if I pause my question for a second and think of where we are in Australia, we've got a lot of our population around the East Coast and the West Coast and a big empty area in the middle with lots of remote towns and a lot of people that have to travel a long way. And a lot of countries are set up in that way. So how does telehealth help those people in rural and remote areas?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great way to access care. As you said, people that live in rural and remote areas, they often don't have the health professionals in that area. Often it's by choice. A health professional doesn't want to work in a rural or remote location. But telehealth allows, I would say, equitable access to these health professionals. So they may not be able to see them face-to-face, and there may be times where they will have to travel for an initial consultation or if something requires in-person care. But they can also have a hybrid mode of service delivery where they may need to come and see the health professional every now and then, and then there's other elements that can be delivered via telehealth. So they're still able to access care, which I think is the most important thing.
Yeah, definitely. So what sort of, give us some examples of some elements of care that could be done easily via telehealth and others where you may say, may put the effort into get the person in and see them face to face.
Yeah, I think obviously the most obvious one that stands out is if you need to do some, I suppose, orthopedic testing, although it can be done via telehealth, you're really relying on the patient to give you feedback. And as a clinician, there's times where you need to actually feel the movement. You need to feel, is there an end feel? Is it moving more than, you know, it traditionally would? And you're not going to get that information via video conferencing or telephone. So in those instances, it is important to have that patient come in for the initial assessment so that you can gather all your objective data so you've got it there. And once you've prescribed a rehabilitation program, if it's something as simple as checking in, providing education advice, or even upgrading exercise programs, you know, with the technology we've got today, with all of the platforms that are available that have really nice videos showing patients how to perform an exercise, it's relatively easy to be able to upgrade those exercises and saving the patient having to come in.
Yeah, now, that's a really good point. It's not just the, and you talked about the synchronous, asynchronous and remote monitoring, but it's also just the sheer number of video, high quality video resources, everything from people's YouTube channels through to pay for view type services. So there's a lot that's available.
So, yeah, there's so much these days. It's great.
Yeah. Okay. So that gives us a really good idea of the type of people who can benefit and how it can be used. So what if I was in a private practice? It doesn't have to be a musculoskeletal private practice, but I'm doing my own business and I want to add telehealth services. Where would you start me off if you were my mentor?
I mean, look, telehealth can be implemented at any point in a patient's journey. I think the biggest thing is education around telehealth. Prior to COVID, patients probably never heard of telehealth or physio being delivered via telehealth. So it was this foreign concept, you know, that sort of had a rapid uptake over a very short period of time. And there was quite a bit of resistance to change. So I would say that educating the patient on telehealth so that they're aware of what it is and normalizing it, I think that's really important as well. You know, when you're discussing the rehabilitation program or your management program with your patient, you know, have it as an option. You know, if they don't want to come in, you know, we can upgrade these exercises from home if that's more convenient for you, or, you know, if you'd prefer to come in, that's okay as well. So first and foremost, I would say just educate your patients on the benefits and also the limitations of telehealth. You know, you need to provide them with all the information.
So on the topic of limitations, is there how much do you charge for telehealth typically, in how much do private practices charge for telehealth? Do they charge less because of the limitations, or has it evolved somewhat? So What do you think?
That's a really interesting question. And I think that that varies a lot between clinicians. Some may charge a lesser rate for telehealth, but some charge the same rate. At the end of the day, it's still your time and your expertise that you are delivering. And I have the feeling that if you're charging less for something, it's giving the notion that it's of lesser quality. And it's certainly not lesser quality. But there's no right or wrong here. There's no rhyme or reason. It's really up to, I suppose, the clinician individually as to whether they choose to charge a lower rate, the consultations may be shorter, or whether they keep their rates the same.
And the market will determine that and what the value people perceive as well. So that education of people more broadly about what benefits there are and all the work that goes into a telehealth consult behind the scenes as well.
Yeah, absolutely. They're
interesting points. So you worked with, or perhaps you tell us, what work have you done more broadly with professional associations and, you know, helping educate about telehealth and help set up systems for people to use telehealth, or physios in particular?
Yeah, so I've worked with a couple of universities, Monash and Macquarie University, developing these sort of curriculum courses, just in foundational stuff for predominantly DPT students and bachelor students, just to give them a bit of idea of what telehealth is, because we know that it's not very well delivered across the curriculum in entry to practice physiotherapy programs. And at that time when they were developed, there were a lot of clinical placements that were having to be done remotely via telehealth. So it was quite a nice way to, I suppose, provide them with the foundational knowledge so that they would be comfortable and confident using some form of technology, when they're dealing with patients.
And with the questions I'm asking here, I should probably go and do those units. But this is why I'm asking the questions, just to share this knowledge more widely. So is this improving, do you think? You mentioned the COVID pandemic and the forced online care that was sort of forced upon us, and then the adaption that happened there. Are people developing better skills across the board? What's happening in physio education across the board, do you think, with telehealth?
Look, I think it can certainly be improved. I think that by nature, physiotherapy, we like to be contemporary, but I think that sometimes we're stuck. We're not as cutting edge as we should or could be. But in saying that, there are some universities, Charles Sturt in particular, and those rural ones that have fantastic telehealth education and training throughout their programs. Obviously, it's important there because they are more of a rural and remote type of university. But I'd like to think that telehealth is becoming more accepted within physiotherapy and the education space. But the reality is, I think that we still have a fair way to go.
Yeah, and I guess I'll put a caveat in there, or disclaimer, that I'm certainly not comparing across programs in any way. It's really, we're just promoting good activities and practices, and just commenting on this developing, very new and developing part of the profession.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So let's talk about your assessment of things with your research. So if you look up Luke's Google Scholar profile, you can see all these papers, and that's something that you can do. And I'll also add any of the papers into the show notes that we talk about here. So one of your studies was an international Delphi study. Listeners can Google what a Delphi study is, involving developing consensus from experts. And you aim to define the capabilities of physiotherapists, or the required capabilities of physios to provide care via video conferencing. And you came up with a framework comprising 60 capabilities across these 7 domains. So if we touch on those domains, I think that might be quite useful for people to where to direct their training and where they need to upskill. So let's go. What are the domains that you found?
Well, they're quite varied. There's obviously compliance that was really important. There was technology, the use of it. There was patient safety, patient privacy and confidentiality. There's also management elements as well, how to manage a patient in the digital environment. And it was it was a really interesting project to actually, I suppose, kick off, because at that time when we developed that, there was nothing around for physiotherapists, and it was at the height of the pandemic. You know, it had just hit. We were probably, I would say, 8 months into the pandemic, and everybody was sort of scrambling to try and find these things to sort of direct how we're going to now change our practice from in-person to sort of online. And then when we'd done some preliminary searches, there were some frameworks that were around for other professions, but there were none that really, I suppose, captured the nuances of physiotherapy itself. So we thought probably a good idea to, you know, create something that physiotherapists can use as sort of a blueprint. You know, if you've never done it before, it's quite nicely laid out that you can have a look at these capabilities and sort of tick them off and go, oh yeah, well, I can do this. There might be things that you never thought about with compliance and your documentation and,
yeah,
you know, your legal requirements around that. So
if you're my mentor and I'm setting up a private practice tomorrow and I was asking these questions, I could go to that study and have that blueprint of what's required, perhaps think of some things that I may not have thought of. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There is also another resource, and I'll provide you with the link that we created that has, it's a clinician companion. So it's got the framework in there, but it's also got a self-checklist at the end of the document where people can go through and say whether, yes, they feel confident that they can do that, or no, they can't. And it's probably just a nice way for people to see, well, perhaps I need to upskill in, you know, the technology domain, or I need to upskill in the compliance domain. So it's quite a nice self-evaluation tool.
And practice owners and mentors could use that for their training as well. That sounds
absolutely
really good. So we'll put that in the show notes, and people can Google it and find it as well, but we'll link it in there along with the article, the original article. And we should shout out to you, some of your co-authors as well.
Yeah.
So who was in the team?
Absolutely. So it was a pretty pretty robust team. There was Professor Kim Bunnell, Professor Rana Hidman, Dr. Belinda Lawford, and also Professor Trevor Russell, who were all a part of the framework and getting that off the ground. So
hanging out with some professors.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hanging out with some professors with the expertise in the field. So it was quite a good learning experience, that's for sure.
Yeah, fantastic. And you've also led a qualitative study. We touched on that before, using interviews, and you looked at the attitudes and experiences of physiotherapy educators in implementing telehealth into their education programs. So I think we've sort of touched on that before in terms of the summary was it's a new emerging area. There's a long way to go, but you've helped us a lot with in terms of documenting where people were at that point in time. Any other thoughts related to the qualitative? So you did interviews, you transcribed them, and you used analysis techniques and summarized the attitudes and experiences. Anything else that you found from that's interesting for us?
I think a really interesting point was that the type and volume of content that was delivered significantly varied across universities.
Right.
So, you know, as I mentioned before, some universities have, you know, telehealth education and training that's scaffolded across the entire program, whereas others, there's absolutely nothing in there. It's simply a mention of an ad hoc discussion in a tutorial. So there's a huge disparity, between what is currently being delivered. But also interestingly, and not really surprisingly, are the barriers to implement something into a physiotherapy curriculum, you know? It's very full, it's busy, it's overcrowded. If something new has to go in, then obviously something has to come out. So that was a huge barrier. Time was another, you know, barrier that everybody reported on, that we just don't actually have the time to do it. And lastly, it was really the expertise of the staff. You know, they felt that nobody in the department actually had the experience or expertise to know what to put in there. What do we need to train them in, you know? So I suppose that's kind of where my whole PhD has come from, is it's very education focused on, you know, providing or trying to provide a solution to a problem and a gap that we identified.
Yeah. But now we can go, you can always bring in high quality sessional staff with that experience of actually doing it. And you can, you yourself have developed curriculum, but you can also go to your research and your clinician companion as well. And you can, you know, as a graduate, you can go there and look at what the capabilities that are required for you to use telehealth are. So you've really pushed us forward in the profession in terms of having that foundation of research and somewhere to go to train up in this area. So that's certainly where I'd go to.
Absolutely. And I mean, to go a little step further, I'm in the final stages of finalising an e-learning course that's specifically for physiotherapy and tutor practice programs. So we've taken into consideration a lot of the barriers that were spoken about. And this e-learning course is really developed for the academics. It sits online. They can scaffold it across the program if they feel. They can have it as just one module. It's not extensive, takes a couple of hours to do, and there's also going to be a teaching toolbox that's attached to it. So there's assessments that are already done and quizzes. So it's literally taking the thought process out of it so that they can just pick this up and deliver it to their students.
Mm. Well, that's really useful. It's very practical. And it's also, you see research published, and sometimes we're all in the same position. And sometimes you think, oh, how am I going to read the whole thing and understand it? It's really nice to get the author of the research in it and actually explain what you did and why you did it and how we can use it. And especially that you've made a companion guide, the clinician companion as well. So that's great. Any final thoughts? And I guess I always ask the same question on the podcast. What do you think are the most important foundational knowledge and skills for a physiotherapist? So why don't we do that? Just a question I haven't prepared you for at all. What do you think?
In general or regarding telehealth?
Let's go in general, and then we can finish off with some final thoughts on telehealth.
Yeah, okay. Foundational skills are just super important. I would say the number one is communication. And obviously being in practice and looking at new graduates coming through, and often, you know, you might be the most intelligent person there is and know absolutely everything, but if you can't communicate to a patient, it's not going to go very well. And that's what they want. They want that therapeutic alliance, you know, building that relationship with their therapist. So that would be, I suppose, the most important skill in my eyes. I would say another important, it's not so much a skill, but another important thing for new graduates to realise is that it's okay to not know. Mm. You know, we graduate thinking that we need to know everything, and the reality is we're not going to know everything. It's impossible to teach new graduates everything that they're going to be exposed to and see when they're in clinical practice. So it's okay not to know. And just ask questions. Your learning will never stop. You know, have a thirst for learning. That's what you need, because your career, you'll be continually learning.
Mm, that curiosity that drives that thirst for learning. So if I summarize some of that, that therapeutic alliance, it's not just what you say, the communication, but the interpersonal skills, you know, and developing rapport with people. It's okay not to know. That's what will happen. If you think you know everything, that's a red flag. That's a real concern.
That's exactly right.
That's not someone who's set themselves up for success and lifelong learning. So you will not know a lot of things. So you're being that educated consumer of research, but also knowing where to look things up, asking questions. Yeah. So communication comes up all the time when I ask that question. But it's interesting that we're talking about telehealth. Here we are communicating. I'm sure people can hear that we're doing this via Zoom in this case, or teleconference software. Is that a whole another area to develop that communication skill, building rapport and interpersonal skills with someone that you haven't met face to face?
Yeah, absolutely. It's huge. I mean, communication underpins everything that we do, you know. Mm. And if we think about the online space, communication, again, is key. You know, we don't have the ability when we're assessing a patient to grab them and move them in the position that we want them to, because they're not actually understanding what we're telling them, you know. Mm. In clinical practice, we can say, I want you to move through this particular movement pattern or range of motion. And if the patient's not getting it, we can physically move them through that range and say, this is what I want you to do. You can't do that when you're on video conferencing. So your communication, your instruction delivering, and your queuing has to be far more detailed, because we no longer have that hands-on approach that we can just grab them and go, oh, look, this is what I mean, you know? Finding creative ways, modeling the movement first and then getting the patient to do it, but more so communication, the instructions and the queuing of getting that patient into a particular position or moving them through a certain movement is really, really important.
Mm. And we can apply a lot of the points you just made to exercise prescription, for example, via telehealth, the queuing and the modeling of the movement, the feedback.
Mm. Absolutely. And look, the beautiful thing with prescribing exercise, as I said before, you've got amazing apps like PhysiTrack and Vold, I think there is, or Vlad. They have these great videos that you've got the opportunity to share your screen with your patient, have the video going. You can see them doing the movement, you know, show them the video first, talk them through it, get them to do it, keep it up there. Like it's, you've got that constant feedback that the patient can see what you want them to do and they can try and mirror that movement. So it's certainly made, I think, everybody's job easier when consulting via video conferencing with these apps. But again, we still need to have that communication.
I think that's a really important final message, and it's one that has been repeated many times on the podcast for a very good reason, because I think we're repeating ourselves if we go over those reasons again, but I think you've summarized that really well, Luke. So any final thoughts or anything else that you want to mention, any studies you're doing or anything else, anywhere to find out more about you?
Oh, I mean, Google is the place to go. LinkedIn or Twitter, you'll find me somewhere, you know.
Yeah,
you'll... I think probably my final thought is I'd just like to say to everybody, just it's important to not be afraid to use telehealth and just give it a go. Get in there, get your hands dirty, have a practice, and you may be pleasantly surprised at what you can actually achieve doing via telehealth. So just have a go.
Have a go and know that there's an emerging body of research and clinician and patient friendly resources available for you to look at, so you don't have to do it in the dark and make mistakes that others have made.
Absolutely. At this point in time, you've got ample resources that are available, you know, online for you to be able to, I suppose, successfully and safely deliver interventions via telehealth. So I would say let's go. It's an emerging area. Research continually comes out with, you know, excellent findings. So have a look into it.
Fantastic. Thanks very much, Luke. Everyone who's listening, if you want to follow up on any of that, go and have a look at the show notes. And they're found, you just scroll down when you're in your favorite podcast app into all the information that's below there. I add timestamps in. I'm still doing all that effort to do timestamps so you can find interesting parts of the conversation. I'd love to know if you use those, if that's worth doing. Not everyone does that with podcasts, but it helps me find things when I look back through conversations. And if you're finding these episodes helpful, please connect with us. You know how to find Luke. You can Google, but you can find him through social media. You know how to find Susanna and I at Periton Physio, or me at Luke Periton on social media. Please let us know what you're thinking of the conversations and if there are any topics that you want to dive into. I certainly want to explore more on this topic of telehealth. But Luke set us up with a really nice foundation there, which is fantastic. So thanks very much, Luke, once again.
Thanks for having me.
So until next time, this is Luke Davies and Luke Periton. You've got Luke Squared today. Wishing you all the very best with your studying, professional development, and lifelong learning.